Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mindful Chef. Chef Leisha Barnett here with you today. And today I have a special guest with me, Chef Daima. Say hello.
Hello.
Hi, Daima. How are you?
I am well. Thank you. So happy to have this opportunity to be here with you today.
Yes, I'm glad you decided to meet me in Starbucks. So you guys check out the ambiance, the background noise of your local Starbucks. I am a coffee fanatic, so it only seems fitting that we are here in this place.
Correct. Coffee is the life.
Yes.
Nature's life.
True. So you guys that are listening, one of the reasons why I wanted to have my friend Daima here on the podcast was so that we can talk about all things food. She is a fellow chef in the industry, and we are going to have a great time. I can't wait for y'all to get to know her. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Daima, what is your favorite food?
My favorite food, not to sound cliche, is chicken. I love chicken, fried, dyed, laid to the side. I am the, not Forrest Gump. What was the other character in Forrest Gump?
Oh, his friend,
yeah,
Bubba.
I'm Bubba. I'm the Bubba of chicken.
Of chicken instead of shrimp.
Right.
You can fry it.
Sauté it.
You can
baste it. Right. Whatever
dip
you do
it in
to
batter.
Right. Don't overcook it and we good to go.
Oh, yeah. Overcooked chicken is the worst.
Overcooked chicken.
Terrible, terrible, terrible. So, what is your favorite thing to cook?
Well, my favorite thing to cook is, well, I'm going to say brunch. I would say breakfast, but I'm going to say brunch because brunch satisfies that Libra. I have that
balance.
Right. I got that balance with the brunch. I can do a little bit of breakfast, a little bit of lunch, and it all combines.
Brunch is bae, I feel like for real.
Serious.
We need t-shirts. Brunch is bae.
You know what? Let me write down.
Let's make a mental note. I got somebody who can make it too.
Right.
You better write
that
one
down. Let's write
that down. We're
going to
get matching t-shirts.
Right.
This says brunch is bae.
Brunch is bae.
Yes, I feel all of that because
I
love
know
breakfast.
They're
going
to want it right
lunch.
Now. They're going
to
want it.
Yeah, just by saying it, like, we need to do
feels
brunch.
It, right, it feels good. It
yeah.
Feels good.
So when you make brunch, what are you making?
Well, I'm a big waffle fan. I love waffles because they're so diverse. You can do a little bit of, you can do a savory waffle. You can do a sweet waffle. And then another.
Sound like you the bubble gum of waffles,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that too.
A little bit.
That too. Well, you know, I'm all about diversity, doing things, being able to add a little bit of difference to something that's traditional and taking it and making it your own. And waffles kind of yield a good place for that. You know,
that's true.
Start off with a good foundation and you can build, you know, from there. So. That's pretty cool. And then Eggs Benedict is probably another one of my big favorites.
Love
yeah.
it. Mm-hmm.
And I love, you know, I love taking traditional things that you can turn into something else. So I've done a regular Eggs Benedict.
Yeah.
But I never did like that Canadian bacon. I was like, what?
Oh, yeah.
Just
sad,
don't hold
right?
up well. Why you put this little piece of meat in between all these...
So what do you use instead of that little sad piece of Canadian bacon?
I love doing crab cakes, Eggs Benedict,
or
salmon cakes. Salmon
yes.
cakes are
you're making
my
me
favorite.
Hungry. So when I lived in Maryland, that was kind of like a thing, the crab cakes Benedict. And I would say that's the first time I had it where I was just like, what?
Right.
Oh my goodness, because it's different there.
It's way
I mean,
different, I'm
we
sure.
got the lovely Dungeness
Fresh.
Here,
right.
but that Maryland blue crab has won a special place in my heart.
I understand. I understand. I've never even been to Maryland and it has a special Yes, I have. I lied. It has a special place in my heart.
Okay, so we got the salmon cakes, the crab cakes, Eggs Benedict. What else? And waffles. What
waffles.
Else?
A crawfish etouffee omelet.
Oh.
Yeah. I had the pleasure
of
having
one
in New
Orleans.
And it was a life changer, man, when I tell you. Whew, came back home trying to recreate it as soon as I got off the plane. So,
I could feel that. I felt all of that
right
on the inside. Because when I went to New Orleans and my group went to the Court of Two Sisters.
I think that's where we went to.
That's where you hit.
I think that's where I had it
too. Girl, they was making them omelets right there, and it was like Etouffee. I was like, what? Really?
Huh? You say what?
You can put that in my
You can bring this up a notch.
Omelet? Yes, I want all of it.
I think the heavens opened up immediately when I started singing. It was a beautiful experience.
I was like, I just don't know. I don't think I ate anything else that like it was that and fruit maybe.
Yeah, I think I bit off of my daughter's. I don't remember what she ordered, but yeah, I was like, yeah, no, I'm good right here.
The eggs are just, I'm an egg girl, so that's a big thing for me anyway. It is it's a thing. I have to have eggs all the time.
I love eggs too. I mean, that's another, that's something else that you can take and do like, you know, all kinds of things with.
Right.
You know, an egg, a boiled egg. Soft boil? I mean, even just that right there.
Right, yeah.
Soft boil, hard boil.
And a toast with some avocado. And some chili flakes. See, you guys, I don't know if you can tell, but me and Daima are going to just talk about food and be in our feelings for the next few minutes. Right. So I hope y'all
prepared. Maybe we should have ate before we started this.
I mean, I did, but still.
I did
like,
too, but it don't feel like it when you start talking about food. Huh?
Especially etouffee omelets. Like, I did not have an etouffee omelet, so I don't think what I ate counted today.
Doesn't.
No, we're going to have to rectify this situation.
Right.
That sounds like a super delicious brunch. The one thing that I always have to have from brunch though are potatoes. I'm such a potato girl.
Now, I will say I probably used to be a potato person, but after going through all this weight, you know, thing, I don't gravitate as much towards the potato as I used to. So I'm generally, if I have an omelet, I'm pretty good. I can just go with the omelet and be okay. But if I'm on a cheat day, or you know, if I want a little extra something,
yeah,
I might, you know,
the potato
might have
has
a little
to,
bit of potato.
The, yeah, it has to have its place.
Right. And then it's also about execution, right?
Like, well, yeah, it has to be
not done right. I'm
you
good.
Might as well just not.
I'll save those for.
Yeah, just put that to
for
the
another
side.
Time.
Mm-mm. I don't need it if it's not gonna be.
Because if you didn't smother them enough, it's still a little hard in the center. Or your onions not caramelized.
And see, you know, so here's my thing with the breakfast potato world. I always get my hopes up when I hear a place has home fries.
Right.
And then what I get is don't look like it was made at anybody's home.
Right. Like either you took some French fries, already made French fries, and cut them up and threw some onions in there and called it a day. Or you got a frozen O'Brien mix and, you know, it don't really brown. It's still all white.
Well, what really hurts my heart is when they actually use real whole potatoes and they cut them by hand. And they look like, you just have this expectation like my mama made those potatoes, and then when you bite into it, it's not cooked all the way. And then the onions are still raw. Like, you need the caramelized onion. You cannot. The potato has to be soft.
Right. I don't know what part of the game this is.
No,
right.
They messed it up. Right. So yeah, that would leave me without a potato in a heartbeat. Like, I'd be like, I'm good. I'm just going to eat this omelet, this here toast. I'm good. I'm not fooling with your half-cooked potatoes. Because you went through the trouble of chopping it up yourself and
didn't
cook it long.
Right.
So disappointing.
I agree.
So I feel like we're going to have a brunch session soon because there's this talk about brunch food that I think between the two of us, we can make brunch.
That, right?
It's going to be just right. It's going to be the way we want it. With etouffee omelets.
I can see that.
And potatoes cooked properly.
Right.
And lots of mimosas too.
Ooh, that sounds like a party.
We got to add that.
Right.
Yes. Let's pick a day.
Have the drinks.
Yes.
Put that on the calendar for sure.
Note to self. Siri? No. All right. So, Daima, tell us where you're from and how food has shaped your life.
I am a Bay Area baby. I was born in San Francisco, raised in the city of Oakland. As far as being a foodie is concerned, well, I come from a matriarch of cooks. None of them decided to explore the culinary world as a career, but both on my mother and father's side, both my grandparents were beautiful cooks, especially my mother's mother. My mother's mother had 8 children. And so, needless to say, right.
She had to cook for a lot of people.
She had to cook in satisfying the need of 8 different tastes.
That's rough.
Could become complicated,
right? It
was a lot of
just eat this happening.
Oh, yeah. That day and age for sure. You're going to eat what's on your plate, whether you like it or not.
That's dinner.
That's what's available. And, you know, but I think as she got older, the way that she bridged the gap of showing love to her kids was being able to create something that they loved individually. Mm-hmm. So when I came along, by the time I was able to appreciate what she had to offer, like my grandmother would do things for each child, you know, because each child had an allergy
or something, their favorite thing.
Right. So when we would get together, it would be a smorgasbord. It would be a buffet. And that was how I grew up, and I loved that. Like, you know, and I thought that every family grew up that way. Like, you didn't have 10 desserts. Your grandma only made one? Oh,
your grandma don't love you.
You poor baby.
Only
I'm
one
so
dessert?
Sorry.
Oh,
dang.
No, man. That's how we were, too. Right. I was every family gathering is like, oh, you know, auntie likes the banana pudding, so you gotta have banana pudding. Right. And then uncle wants red velvet cake, and you got the peach cobbler, and this turkey is cooked this way, and that one is... So everybody has their own little world.
So I had uncles that were allergic to nuts. So I had other uncles that, you know, like chocolate, or, you know, auntie only, you gotta make that upside down, We had everything, like definitely 10, 12 desserts at one time.
Wow.
With no problems. Plus the dinner.
Smorgasbord.
So I was spoiled when it came to that. And I mean, you know, growing up with that type of standard, you know what I mean? It raised everything to a whole new level for me. You know, I just thought that was life. That's how everybody ate. So
and now you're overachiever with food because you're like, we got to have 17 desserts. Right. Y'all don't understand.
Right. So I look like I'm an overachiever when it's really just reality for me.
Right.
This is a day-to-day life for me. So
it's in your DNA.
It's in my DNA. Yeah. Sometimes it's a good thing. Sometimes it's not so good.
Man, that double-edged sword is a trip. Mm-hmm. Okay, with all of that wonderful background and everything, how do you pick your favorite food memory from that?
That's a good question. How do you pick a favorite food memory from that? And then I have so many. But of course, it would have to be one that involved my grandmother, who I probably designed... everything that I've based my love of food off of.
Wow. But,
so
that's where it starts.
Right. We come from a traditional, background, and my grandmother was one of those individuals that really felt that the best way to a man's heart
was
through his stomach, right? Me being the honorary individual that I was. Me being the honorary individual that I was, I totally wanted to go the whole different direction.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you know, there has to be more to me than my ability to cook. So, ironically, I did not take that avenue. I told myself I hated cooking for that purpose.
You're like, wait a minute.
Like, no. Right. So
something's not right with this. That's your inner feminist mindset.
Right. Yeah. So I secretly had a love for cooking, but I didn't want anybody else to know, just because of that stubbornness. That, you know, ooh, I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna learn how to cook because a man's gonna have to appreciate me for more than just this.
That's a hard place, especially as a woman in the industry, because like I feel like for us, we enjoy doing it.
Right.
We love cooking.
Right.
One of the things about cooking for other people is to see their expression when they enjoy your food. You be sitting back there like, hey, that was good. Right. But then at the same time, if there's this level of expectation that you can't secure a man unless you can put food in front of him, I can see being a young woman saying, nah, I'm not going to cook just for that.
Right.
Like, no. You got to see something else.
Definitely. But I took it to the extreme. You know, I was like, oh, okay, then I'm not going to learn how to cook at all. You know, just dumb, right? Young, dumb.
Yeah,
young
not thinking dumb. About you got to eat too, hey, honey.
Exactly. And that's exactly what came into play as I got older. I was like, wait a minute, I have a family now. Mm-hmm. You know, I have at the time I had a husband, and I was like, hold on. These skills actually prove useful. Grandma, you didn't tell me the whole story.
Right.
What about the babies?
She left the part out about the babies.
About the babies. What about me, Grandma? Right. What about me? You worried about a man I haven't even met yet. Hold on a second. So, I had plenty of calls to my mother, plenty of calls to my aunts, and, you know, like, hey, how did Grandma... Like, man, I should have been really paying better attention.
Right?
I should have had my pencil and my pen in hand.
I take it notes. Boil water.
Right.
Add salt.
Right. But I will say one thing that I did do. I was, even as an adult, I've always been one of those people that would pay attention. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Regardless.
Yeah.
I watch. So thankfully, I watched enough to where I was able to pick up some things.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wish that if there was a time machine, I would go back with mm-hmm. my pencil and pad in hand.
Yeah.
Because, sure. I'll speak for my family. They didn't write things down.
Mine don't.
My grandmother didn't.
Either,
a dash of this, a bit of that. You're like, I don't know what a dash is, Grandma.
Right.
What is a dash?
You
my dash is different
right.
than your
dash. The ancestors tells
right.
me what it is.
And it does work out, right?
Just
say a little prayer.
You'd be like, come on, help me, Lord. I need all the help. Sprinkle, and it turns out good. But that was the same thing in my house, because there was one cookbook, I think, like a Betty Crocker.
Everybody had a Betty Crocker cookbook.
It was that one that looked like a picnic table, the red and white checkered.
Right. Yep, I remember that.
And it was like a binder.
Right. That you can add.
Yeah. So we had that, but my mother never used it. Like, never. It must have been a gift to her or something like that. But, you know, I would flip through it and start cooking stuff out of there. But I learned by watching, right. Like you said. I watched them, both of my parents in the kitchen, and just was like, oh, okay, this is how it worked. All right.
Right.
And then got in there. So that's a great memory. You have a lot of deep roots and connections to food. So when we come back from our break, we're going to talk about how you got to where you are now, what that looks like. It's going to be fun.
Wonderful. I'm excited.
All right. See y'all in a minute. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to The Mindful Chef. Back with Chef Daima here. In the first half, we talked about what her favorite food was. It was chicken, y'all. It was chicken. Her favorite thing to cook was brunch. Yes. And we had a lot of fun just talking about food and heritage. But one of the reasons why I wanted to interview Daima and have her with me was because she is from the Bay, like me, Oakland girl, black chef who has worked her way through this industry in a not so linear way. And I always feel like that's really important to highlight for people who are listening, who are kind of considering going into the culinary world, what that looks like and how everything doesn't have to look like it does on reality TV. and so much more. So Daima, just tell the people about you and your work and how you even got into the culinary field.
Well, I ironically, I didn't enjoy cooking growing up. At least that's what I told myself. And as I became an adult and I understood how beneficial it was to learn how to cook because I had a family of my own. And, you know, I found out going out every night was no longer an option for a family of six.
Oh, and, yeah, that's insane.
Right. And not only as an option as far as financially, but you want something that's going to be beneficial to your family, right? That, mm-hmm. that supports their longevity. And I just found that a lot of the places that we were eating weren't that.
Right.
It may have been quick. And it may have satisfied you for the moment.
Right.
But as far as a long-term goal,
yeah,
it wasn't meeting
that. You
can't
do that.
And,
yeah.
And my family, of course, they still are the most important investment in my life. And I asked myself if I was doing a good service to my family by us going out and eating. Not, like I said, not even the financial part of it.
But just,
the bigger picture, right? And I was like, you know what? It would behoove me to learn how to cook.
It would behoove you.
It would be what behoove me would. But yeah, so, and I said, you know, and that's where I started calling my mother more and saying, hey, Mom, how do I do this? And what do I put in here? And so on and so forth. And I really started to find a deeper appreciation and value for that. And and my family did too, you know.
I really like the way you put that when you said that your family is your biggest investment. I definitely don't think that many of us look at it that way.
Right.
You know, I mean, we feel it in our hearts.
Right, but we're not bold enough to say it.
We're not bold enough to say it, especially in the context of what you're saying is as a parent, you were like, wait, I could do better.
Right.
And that's powerful.
Right. Yeah, I want my babies to, of course, outlive me, right?
Yeah.
And we are the foundation,
mm-hmm.
you know, for how they look at food, their relationship with how they eat. And so if I'm continuously telling them that fast food is the way to go, you know, quick and easy is what you want, microwave life.
Right.
I can't blame them if they end up, you know, with diabetes or overweight or, you know, so on and so forth, because I kind of laid that foundation for them. So
that's rough, you know, when you look at things in that way. Sometimes it's like, you know, for me, it was the opposite because I have been cooking since I was 18.
Right.
So I got to a place where what I was serving at home and doing at home was vastly different than at work.
Right.
Because I didn't have any more spoons left. I was so tired all the time and struggled and was just like, oh, yeah, here, eat this.
Right.
And then I was in the same mindset, like, this can't be life. I can't set them up like this.
Right.
And it was affecting me too. So, oh no, we got to do something.
and I can't give the best to somebody else.
And then
the leftovers to my family. Like, how does that look?
That's not right.
Right. Mm-mm. Not at all. Not at all.
So what happened after that? You started like digging into your mama's recipes.
I started digging in more. Well, at that point, my mother was still here. So she was definitely a catalyst in helping me to look at food in a different sense now, mm-hmm. From as a mother and a wife. I started looking. I started going to her more. I don't know if I YouTubed at that point. I think that was a little early. So
okay,
I probably
okay.
wasn't YouTubing or Googling
but
yet.
Okay,
but I was,
okay. But
I was definitely referencing,
huh?
Right.
Some magazines, books,
some
like
books,
that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Definitely a whole lot of cookbooks. But then I just decided, you know, that to go to culinary school. So I kind of explored Cordon Bleu mm-hmm. in San Francisco. And after, you know, some research, I decided to go to Diablo Valley in Pleasant Hill.
It was
a better fit for me.
Yeah,
it was a little long. It was more long term.
Yeah,
but I needed more long term.
It's an investment of time.
Right.
Yeah, I explored the Cordon Bleu for a little minute as well. It was too freaking expensive.
Right.
And for me, I had already gone to culinary school.
Right.
My mind was like, when I got out of the Navy. Coming back here where there was no military presence anymore, the base in Oakland was already closed, convincing people that I was worth what I was worth was an issue. And so I said, well, I'm going to go to Cordon Bleu and be able to slap it, put some respect on my name, man, for real. Well, found out the expense of it all was just a little too ridiculous for the fact that I still would come out and be a line cook. So I was like, no, I don't think I want
to
do that.
And it honestly, at the end of the day, I mean, no disrespect to the organization, it's just not as valued as much as it may have been once
before. Yes, it's totally different. And I agree with you on that, particularly in this area where we have a lot of options for education in the culinary field for people in the Bay Area and in Northern California in general. There are options now that I think didn't present themselves before. So we have a wider range of choices.
Definitely. And more practical, you know, that fit our individual needs. Online, in person, you know, I enjoyed the process that I went through at DVC. It was wonderful for me. It worked well. It catered to my needs. I got to interact individually. It wasn't these large classes, you know.
Right.
Now, it's grown a lot more since I was in school. I was in school 10 years ago. Ooh. So it's grown a lot.
I won't even tell you when I was because, again, I was 18.
We dating ourselves. But we look good for our age.
We not new to this. Right. We true to this.
For real. But yeah. So, and I have to say too, the process that I went through with my Cordon Bleu, what I didn't like, I found out that they were using some marketing tactics.
Absolutely.
You know, to try and gear me towards going to their facility. And there's a sweet lady that would call me and talk to me. And she had this, you know,
this way about
not
her,
only
so.
This way, but I could tell she was of African American descent.
Oh no, they did.
Yes, they did. And
she was probably the only Black person in the office.
And I really believe I started to understand that this was their plan. They would have certain people contact certain people who they felt were able to create a relationship with them. And I don't like to be played with.
That's a little tricky right there.
That left a little bad taste in my mouth. And I was like, you know what? I don't think.
I mean, because on the one hand, you're like, it might be good that they're searching out people of color for the industry, for their school and all of that. But on the other hand, don't
be
patronize
sneaky.
Me.
Right. Don't be sneaky.
Don't, like, you know, don't underhandedly try to handle me. Right. I hate being handled.
You and me both, my
dear. Oh, no. If I feel like you're handling me, we have a problem.
A huge problem.
We have a whole
problem. A huge problem. No.
Listen, it's over. It is over if I feel like you're handling me. Because, no.
Same here.
I have to remind people, I'm from Oakland.
That's exactly what I did, too.
Wait a minute. You got to get up early in the morning to get off.
That's why we did not end up at the Cordon Bleu.
No. Hey, no shade for real. I mean, you know, to those who have gone and done well. But it definitely is this is the reason why I do this podcast, so that we can discuss these types of things and kind of like just pull the shade, the wool off, throw back that rug and get that dust from underneath there to show what there are things that we have had to go through in order to sustain in this work.
Definitely.
And it is insane the amount of time and energy that I know that I have put forward to prove myself in the industry. I bet you have some similar stories as well.
Definitely. And I mean, actually, it's ironic that you make that statement, because I was just talking to someone about how, you know, in the home, it's perfectly natural for a woman to be in the kitchen.
But when you get and you put on the white coat,
oh Lord!
All of a sudden,
things
you don't
change.
Know nothing.
You don't belong here, girl. This is not your place. Wait a minute.
Hold on.
I thought I was supposed to be barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen.
Right. You can't. Yo. Oh, I see what we're doing here now.
It's this different
is this,
here.
Is
it's
this what we're doing?
When it's time to get paid, it's different.
It's whole different.
Fall
away.
Okay. So
and
yeah,
they're the ones that'll say, "I learned how to cook from my mama too."
Right. Yeah, but you can't bring that into the kitchen.
No, you don't belong there.
I learned quick, and it's funny to me how in just about every arena that I've worked in the last 11 years, I am generally one of the only, not only black, but also female chefs. Mm-hmm.
You know. Same. Always. That has been my experience. I think there was only one exception.
Right.
In all my years, there was one exception. And the other woman was my boss.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And I enjoyed working for her. She was amazing.
Same here. Like, I'm really trying to search my brain for a time where there was another African-American female chef.
The only place that I've ever had that was when I was in the Navy.
Right.
That was it.
Right.
After I got out and was no longer in the military, there has never been another kitchen where I had the pleasure of sharing that space with a black woman.
Right, right. And there's a certain level of... When you come in, you have to demand respect. Because they don't expect you to have the same abilities. And just because I don't come in with the same vocabulary, just because I don't come in with the same history, right, doesn't mean I don't have the ability.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's unfortunate that you have to fight, you know, to get
every
that respect.
Day I got to fight. Every day I got to fight, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to, I feel like we get each other because of that.
Right.
And also it made us stronger,
right,
women.
Definitely.
Because you can really call me just about anything you want to. I mean, again, I'm from Oakland, so
right,
I've been called a lot of things.
Right.
Then I messed around and joined the Navy and been called a lot of things.
A lot more. Right.
Right? Then you get into those spaces where you're the only woman, the only black person,
mm-hmm,
and then you have all of these men who treat you like crap.
Right, right.
Listen, just don't touch me.
Right, right.
We good.
Right.
Because I got words too. I know how to use them.
Right.
Just as good as you do. But it makes it has made it very difficult in a lot of ways. I had one boss that I had to show him how to do something on the computer. He wasn't computer savvy.
Mm-hmm.
And this was at a hotel. Girl, he was back there docking my hours. I kept getting short paychecks. Ooh. And was like, I don't understand what is happening here.
Ooh.
He was like trying to play stupid, right? So I go to my the main boss, the manager of the hotel, and I was like, listen, you need to check this out. My hours are being messed with.
Right.
Come to find out, they owed me over $2,000. Yes.
Ooh.
He kept fiddling with everybody's hours.
Ooh.
I got him
thinking
fired.
Thinking they wouldn't know.
Yeah. Well, because his payroll was out of control. He wasn't managing the hours properly. And to fix it, of course, when you don't have the right team and you don't have the right elements in place, all of these other things, you know about running kitchens.
Right.
Like, it's really about that delicate balance in managing payroll with the number of guests you get in and all those other things. Well, here it is. He wasn't doing a good job of managing that, so he was messing with everybody's hours.
Right.
Everyone in our department in the kitchen, from the busser on up to the chef underneath him, had their hours fiddled with. And when I blew the whistle and then gave them the deuces. I quit at the same time.
Mm.
Old boy got fired.
Mm.
And then when I came to pick up my last paycheck, everyone was pissed that he got fired. When they literally all ended up with checks somewhere between $2,000 and $5,000 apiece.
Wow.
Because he had been messing with their hours for that long. Oh, you messed up. His wife and him are going through some things, and now he doesn't have a job, and I don't care.
Right, that's my fault?
Y'all want him to keep docking
right.
you. You work for this
right.
money,
right.
and you don't want it.
Right. Had he been honest and maybe came out and said, hey, you know, I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place, and I need some help.
The problem is, I knew more about how to run that place than he did.
Right.
So he came to me about managing hours and payroll.
Mm, that's how he got found out.
That's how he got found out. So that's like the story that always happens. You're in a space where somebody thinks they know more than you do, and you're this unassuming black woman who probably just likes to make casseroles at home and needs a part-time job. That's not what we're doing.
No wits about
here.
You. I just need you to, you know.
You know, I don't have brain.
Just rinse that off.
Yeah. Just keep it going. Speaking of rinse off. Girl, that chef tried to serve some bad pasta. Talking about rinse it off.
See, yeah. he was in the bad, in the wrong field to begin with.
Yeah, we don't operate like that. We can't
he
do
had
it.
He no business there in the first place. See, that's why
none
the universe did
all.
What it did. He needed to just go and get out the
exactly
way.
Exactly why, I'm telling you. So, after all of the trials and tribulations, what are you up to now? What are you doing fulfilling in your culinary world?
Well, you know, things are definitely skyrocketing and taking place. You know, as you know, and that's why you and I relate to each other so well, and keeping, you know, 50 things going on at one time. So I am on a food truck. I run a food truck in Novato for Bay Club. That is cool. Like, not necessarily my top thing to want to do, but it pays the bills.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps me in a field that I want to be in. Mm-hmm. And it also helps with my desire to run my own food truck.
Right, because I can imagine that learning curve where you're figuring out.
Right. And so I think I'm avoiding a lot of financial mishaps that probably some other food
Look
truck owners
that.
Have.
Right. There you go.
So, you know, perfecting things before, you know, I get to that position where I'm blessed myself with my own truck. But in the meantime, I'm also conducting cooking classes through Kitchen on Fire. They operate out of Oakland and in Berkeley. And I'm also doing independent personal chef and private cooking classes as well.
Busy lady.
I don't know. I'm not as busy as you. I'm trying.
I don't know if anybody really wants to be as busy as I am. Like, it just sounds good on paper, right. But some days when you're tired, you be like, man, just one more email, one more phone call, one more run to make.
If that's what it takes to be the baller shot caller that I'm looking to be, you got to do what you got to do. Swish. Nothing but
that's
net, baby.
That's
what
told me. Yeah, this sounds great. You sound like you have a good balance and a mix. And that's something that we talked about before as far as, like, having that good mix and balance of the culinary world, that all the different elements, because there's so much that we can do. When you learn how to cook, that's only like a corner of the real deal, right? So we'll always have work because people got
to
eat.
Yeah, but it took a while to get here because I you know, in my mind, I wanted to satisfy everybody's need. You know?
Oh, I went through that too.
I didn't really think about what I wanted and what I wanted my business to look like. I just thought about what everybody else wanted and how do I satisfy you and how do I make you happy and so on.
Yes.
And it became so draining. Oh, it was so draining.
It is, yeah.
So yeah, we had to change that concept real quick, fast and in a hurry.
Yeah.
So now I'm definitely in a place that I'm happy and I'm looking forward to the progression and seeing what, you know, takes place. Now that I'm in my zone, I should be in.
So what is your zone? What's your niche? What do you, so, if you had to summarize your culinary, your tagline, what would it be?
I'd say brunch is probably my tagline. Satisfying, soulful, and delicious, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I've had your food. I would say that is true.
Yeah, and I want to touch your soul. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I want to spread love. I want you to feel, and that's something that I hear a lot when people eat my food. They say, you know, I can tell that you put care and love into this, and that's what I want.
That's true.
I want you to feel, because I could. The one thing that I tell people in the food industry that I love is that I could share a recipe with you.
It won't taste the
same. It's not going to taste the same.
Because I didn't make it.
You're right.
So, listen. Right. It's just a recipe.
It's just a recipe. It's
but
a blueprint.
But you are you.
Right.
And I am me.
Right. And even if you follow the directions to the T, I guarantee you.
It'll be different.
It's going to be different. So, yeah. And that's what I enjoy, because you can tell the difference in what I do from what someone else's does. Mm-hmm. You know? And that's the beauty of it. That instant gratification, that instant response. So if you see, when you see their eyes light up, you know
right?
what I mean?
Yeah,
when you,
they'd be like, oh my God.
Right, heavenly experience. What is this? What's going on here?
What's happening in my mouth?
It's a beautiful thing.
Yes, yes, yes. I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It has been a wonderful experience.
Thank you for having me. It's been a blessing. I hope we can do a part two.
Yes.
In the kitchen.
I feel like there's a part two coming. So you guys, listen, all y'all out there, be ready because we're going to do a part two in the kitchen. We're going to slang some pots. All right. If you want to find Daima for her personal chef services, give them your info, girl.
I'm on, I believe, just about every social media platform.
You
for
are.
Sure. Twitter. What is
Twitter?
It?
What the hell?
Man, I made a new one. I got a whole new platform going. Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So Chef. Chefddee Creations with an S at the end. I'm not going to spell creations for you. Hopefully you got that.
Chef D Creations on all social media platforms.
Yes, please find me. Say hello and let me know that you are, you know, you came through based on the podcast. We'd love to know that.
Yes, we would. All right. Thank you guys so much for joining me. This has been The Mindful Chef with Chef Daima. Till next time. Bye.